Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Carrie Adloyd. How do we grieve for someone? How does it change and evolve as we get older? My dad died when I was 15, and it took me many, many years to be able to express what I had gone through. So I decided to create Griefcast, a chance to talk, share and laugh about the weirdness of grief and death. But with comedians, so it's not that depressing, I promise. Each time I talk to a different comedian about their own personal experience of grief as we remember someone that they have lost along the way. Whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club, this is a chance to talk about the peculiar human process of death. Welcome to Griefcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey Griefsters, I hope you're having an okay week. I've got some exciting news. I will be doing a live show at the upcoming London Podcast Festival this September. I'm really excited. I love doing the live shows. If you haven't been to one before, there's only been two, so that's probably why, but they are a lot lighter than our normal show. Just have a really nice friendly chat about death and mortality and funeral canapes. I mean, yes, you know, the usual fare. I'm also going to be joined for this live show by some really exciting guests. Andrew Hunter Murray from the No Such Thing as a Fish podcast, and also Ostentatious, the show I do with him. And also all the way from America, Erin Gibson from the absolutely incredible Throwing Shade podcast is going to be my guest as well. So if you would like to come and see that, we'll be on the 15th of September at 7 p.m. Head to the King's Place website. You can find all the details of the live Griefcast and also all the other live shows that are taking part in the festival as well. There's some absolutely amazing podcasts doing shows, so do check it out. And just because I sort of have to say it, if you're enjoying the show, please do rate, review or subscribe, as it means more people can find out about what we're doing and then I can keep making them, which is just a nice way to make sure that the conversations about death keep on happening. And if you have already done it, thank you very much. This week, I'm talking to stand-up writer, actor, and podcaster Jessica Fostercue. Jess hosts the very funny and enlightening Hoovering podcast and is one of the regular co-hosts of The Guilty Feminist. She starred in Motherland, hosts the comedy club on Radio 4 Extra, and has written for Have I Got News For You, 8 Out of 10 Cats, and Mock of the Week. Jess came in to talk to me about her nana, who died when she was in her early 20s. Welcome to Griefcast. I'm here today with stand-up comedian and writer Jess Fostercue.
Hello.
Hello. I always want to call, it's taken me years to not call you Fortescue.
I know, it's a more popular name.
But it's tell everyone what your name's Fostercue means.
I love it that you're having to force it out quite Fostercue. I once was introduced by someone who was so nervous about saying my name wrong that they introduced me as Jeffrey Fostercue.
I've known you for so long, but I still, in my head,
Fostercue, it's Fostercue, like Foster, Kew Gardens.
Fostercue. Oh, that's helpful. Mm. Fostercue.
But
oh,
no R, if you're
relaxed
writing
now.
It.
Fostercue. Yeah. Yeah, but what does it mean? I like
that. Oh, it's Anglo-Saxon and it means strong shield.
I think that's so cool.
Yeah. I think that sounds quite defensive. Yeah. Strong shield. Yeah. No wonder I'm not very good at taking criticism. but then you think, oh, apparently in those medieval times, shields were as much of a weapon as the sword.
Oh, yeah, they were.
So it just means like...
like hard knot.
Pretty nifty in the... battlefield.
Yeah, because like in Lord of the Rings, the dwarves use their swords and their shields. To
yes, exactly.
People.
I'm from one of those. I'm descendant from
Gimli
mythical,
the Great.
From Gimli the Great.
And you do a podcast yourself, which I've been on.
Thanks for that.
Well, we should talk about it briefly if you want to.
Mine's about eating.
Do you find though, like, does everyone? Because everyone's obviously obsessed with asking me why about death. Is everyone like, why about eating? Is that like everyone's first question?
Do you know what? No, because I think even when people are have lots of issues around eating. Mm. I mean, often the more issues people have got around eating, the more they're like, "Oh my god, I love eating." So, I mean, everyone says that everyone's into food, aren't they, in one way or another. And actually, I've already spoken to one person who was like, "No, I just do it to survive." That's fascinating. But even then, there can be joy in it. Yeah, there's always this. Even that is a fascinating story.
Everybody
I'm going to talk
eats.
To someone soon who's got no sense of taste.
Oh. Mm.
Stuff like that, you know. Wow. And they're like, "Oh, I don't think you want to talk to me." And I was like, "Oh, no, I really want to talk to you."
Who are we remembering today?
My Nana Fostercue, Helinda.
Oh, Nana Fostercue. Yeah. What's her name?
Helinda.
Helinda.
Mm-hmm. She's Austrian.
I've never heard that name, though, even in my time in Austria and Germany. Helinda. Like Helinda. Belinda, but with her H.
Yes. In fact, she had a daughter called Belinda.
No.
Yes.
She thought, I know what's going to go well with this name.
Yeah. Well,
Helinda
I don't know.
Helinda und Belinda.
Helinda und Belinda and Keith. She called my dad Keith Colin.
Keith.
I know. And I
That's
think
very
only
English, isn't it?
Kind of... It's very English, but I think it screams to me of someone who's not English's idea of what a good English name is in the 50s. Colin.
So Helinda is Austrian.
Yeah.
But married
my granddad, Gordy, who's still with us, whose name isn't Gordon, it's Arthur.
Why is he called Gordy?
Arthur, she'd call him. I don't know. I started calling him that, and now the whole family have for... approx 32 years.
Gordy.
Yeah.
Oh, did you think you couldn't say granddad or something?
Well, at the time, do you know, my family all drink a lot and no one can remember anything. And I was two, so I've got that excuse. At least at least it's not because I was shit-faced.
I was two.
I don't remember it. But no, there might have been a Thomas the Tank Engine element.
Oh,
although
yeah,
that's highly disputed. and it might just be, I just think it suited him better.
Yeah, It's nice.
Gordy had and still has like a fabulous, not quite a comb over, but his hair's, it's not bald on top, but it's much thinner. And what he's done is he's grown the top out very, very long and he just sort of swirls it round until Belinda, his daughter, cuts it for him. And my little sister Amy's much younger than me when she was a toddler. So I was in my early 20s. She used to unravel it and flap it over the other way. So it was all dangling down and call him Penelope. And he went along with it. He'll happily play "My name's Penelope" now if his hair gets long enough.
I'm crying. I'm just this old man that's being forced into drag by his granddaughter.
Yeah, basically, it's like RuPaul comes to Farnborough.
Why does she want to do that?
She's very cheeky and funny.
She is. Yeah, I've heard lots of stories about Amy.
She's quite funny.
So Herlinda is growing up in Austria.
Yeah, she grew up in Austria and during the rise of Hitler.
Right, we should mention, I mean, it's a bit of a caveat with Herlinda, isn't it? Yeah. I'm laughing because I know it, but the thing you should know about Herlinda is...
Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, basically she was brought up as... Oh, God. Oh, so she was brought up under Nazi rule.
Yeah.
So...
Come on, Jess.
Her dad, my Grosspapa, my great-grandfather, was a Nazi. Oh, God.
I shouldn't be laughing.
It's so bad
it's
to laugh.
You're sort of embarrassed
it's
about it. Like,
so bad. Of course I'm embarrassed about it, Gary. Oh, God.
Is that really funny? It's like that Mitchell and Webb sketch of, like, you know, when they go, oh, are we the baddies? Like, I imagine you growing up being, like, learning about the war and the Nazis and being like, oh, it was Grandma.
So it was, it's fascinating.
Obviously, Nazis aren't funny. I must say that. I'll get complaints.
Nazis aren't funny. But only insofar as, like, when something's the worst thing it can be, it's also a bit funny. But also, okay, so this is not defending it, but this is what the situation of the family was.
Yeah, it's just what it was. Yeah,
so her parents had, I think there were lots of kids. I've tried to find out these facts for our chat today, and
no one knows.
No one in my drunk family knows. But I think she had, like, six or seven brothers and sisters.
Right, okay.
And they were brought up in abject poverty.
Wow.
There were depression after depression and very, very hard to find work. And her father was very, very prideful.
Right.
Oh, my word, I have some stories for you about him, which explain a lot about her.
Yeah.
And then suddenly Hitler comes along. And from their point of view...
He's a suave guy, saying some good stuff.
I genuinely don't know that they were ever that down with his politics. Mm. But honestly, in reality, they went from a constant, brutal struggle to all having jobs.
Wow,
and everyone they knew had jobs. Because he built loads of roads before he started his warring. He had a huge economic campaign.
Yeah. He loved his roads.
He was good with road building. So anyway, so my great-grandfather had work for the first time. Constant work. They could all eat. They didn't have to worry about having enough food.
Yeah.
And so, of course, they loved him. And also, they were brainwashed. She was a kid. She was a little kid. And I have got her school books.
Wow.
And it is insane. So when I was growing up in Dorset, when you're like 8 or 9, and we all had to bring in artifacts from our grandparents, I had my English grandparents from my mum's side. I had all the usual stuff, same stuff as everyone else, a gas mask.
Ration books.
Books. Those amazing kind of, like, hard leather holdalls that you'd keep your gas mask and your lunch in and stuff. And then from my other side of my family, I had these school books written in the most incredible Gothic German, where they would have to take cuttings from the newspaper, which was just full of propaganda. It was all just pictures of Hitler and articles about how great he was. And they had to paste them into their books and write them out over and over again, drilling in all this propaganda about him.
God.
How the Führer was... like a deity and infallible and our
saviour.
They just
copied the papers?
Yeah, they copied the newspapers out. I mean, I'm sure they did other stuff as well.
Wow.
But a big part of their education for little kids was just, so they were totally brainwashed.
Of course, yeah.
But obviously, as she got older, I only ever met her once she was, in my eyes, this old lady.
Yeah,
she
probably,
you know, she obviously wasn't. She was in her 50s, I think, when I was born. But she, maybe into her early 60s, but she was, by that point, I mean... comparative to that child, I imagine.
Yeah.
Liberal and living in England. She married and it got to the end of the war. And I imagine there was I never was old enough before she died. Or that's not true. But she wasn't the sort of person who was up for conversations about things like
shame over your own history. Yeah.
You know, I've met lots of... I remember going on German exchange as a teenager and... there was so much obvious shame and such a strange embracing of American culture. All the German teenagers we were paired with had loads of American flags and stuff in their rooms. They're all idolising America because there's so much disgust over their own national history.
Yeah.
And whereas with Nana, I don't think that was part of it. I think it was there, but it was never discussed.
Yeah.
But there were some residual racism, definitely.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether... I think she's obviously from a generation who are a lot more racist than our generation.
Yeah, standard.
But with her, that it was, I think there was probably a bit more. But it's so complicated because I think if you ever challenged her on it, I've got some stories. So I feel like that's all very negative, and I need to also make it clear that she just lived through a war from the other side.
Yeah, I think that's definitely, it's definitely part of it. Yeah. Like, they were all, it's so hard for us to imagine, like, all being involved. And actually, funny enough, I was listening, my uncle sent me a talk that my grandpa did very recently, and I haven't heard my grandpa's voice for like 20 years. And it's him talking about his experience as being a Japanese prisoner of war.
Yeah.
And he was in, like, Changi jail. He built the bridge over the River Kwai. Like, he had complete, like, over in Asia. That was his war. Incredible. And he was an incredible man, incredible speaker. And he's talking about these things. And he talks about how the Japanese treated them and how he learnt to forgive them. And how he then, when they went back to Wales, invited the first, like, Japanese person over and, like, worked, like, showed them to his family. Because he had this big thing of, like, this was a war. Wow. Everyone was doing what they were told. But he says in the talk, my wife was less liberal. And my grandma was, utterly, like, hated Japanese people her whole entire life. And then my brother married a Japanese woman. It was pretty awkward. Yeah. But I think it's, you know, like...
Well, I think there was,
like,
a similar thing,
like,
in the sense
now,
that... So my great-grandfather, Großpapa, who is... So the tooth stories about him, he once had a wobbly tooth. And he genuinely tied a bit of string around it and had his wife slam a door to pull it out.
Oh, my God.
But he was very, very quickly captured by Allied forces.
So that's Helinda's dad, right.
He was very quickly captured by Allied forces and in an Allied prisoner of war camp for almost the entire Second World War. So he didn't do any fighting.
Wow.
And he was fed on, like, onion water and he was emaciated. But other than not being fed very well, he wasn't... treated particularly, you know, unfairly or anything. So I think it's the same thing. When then his daughter goes on to marry, at the end of the war, my granddad, Gordy, an English... I mean, he never did any fighting in the war either. He just went over and... Well, sounds a bit, did quite a lot of romantic cavorting during the tidy-up.
Someone's got
yes. to. He's losing his memory now and a lot of his inhibitions. sounds like him. Nana was one of many until he fell in love with her. So I, again, my family aren't open enough for me to know for sure, but I imagine there was some tension over the fact that she had fallen in love with an Englishman and then moved here.
Like, now, like, if that happened now, like, I was trying to think, you know, to be fair to my grandma, she was quite cold lady sometimes, but, being polite, but she, to be fair to her, like, her husband went off to war. He was captured quite quickly as well. Like, they didn't really do any fighting. They were on a boat to Java, he said, and then they got caught. So it was like they were already pissed off because of training. Massive Cardiff regiment. And then for 4 years, you know, she didn't, and he came back and he was 6 stone. Yeah, like, and he nearly died 3 times. So, like, you can see from a woman who hasn't travelled or seen the world that you're just like, well, the Japanese did this. Whereas my grandpa was like, and his big story was, he always said that one day he was in the camp and a very low Japanese soldier got out of his van, delivered a letter thing, but kept the truck running and then came back and an officer saw that he'd been keeping the truck running, which is a waste of petrol, got him out, beat the shit out of him, made him get back in the truck, turn it on, turn it off, got him out, beat the shit out. Did this basically till this soldier was like half dead.
Oh, God.
And my grandpa watched the whole thing and he said that was his turning point. Because he said, if they treat their own people like that, then no wonder they're treating us like that. And that's not to, I have Japanese family now. That's not to say Japanese people are cruel.
No, it's just not, like, it's not that, a cultural thing.
Yeah,
this is just
like,
a
that was
two sides
happening.
Of a war.
Yeah, and he was like, well, that's what's happening to their own soldiers. So no wonder they're not giving us food and they're beating the shit out. That's what I'm living with. So he said that changed his opinion of everything. Because he was like, well... It's just war.
Everyone thinks they're on the.
Everyone thinks they're the
goodie.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like that sketch. This realization doesn't happen till well after the fact.
Yeah.
Also, and I think that what happened to Großpapa really informed a lot of things about my nana in terms of, again, that stuff to do with weight, stuff to do with food.
Yeah.
It's a huge part of my memories of her, and also, I mean, it's just stuff to do with massively repressing your emotions.
Yeah, yeah.
So he got to. I met him. twice as a toddler. And then I think maybe again about 5 years old.
Was he still living in Germany?
Austria.
Austria. So they were still in Austria?
Yeah.
So she was the only one who sort of left?
She was the only one, and all her brothers and sisters stayed there. And they became very wealthy and successful and quite competitive. I think there were lots of big family fallouts over money.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. I was never privy to it. Yeah. And I even didn't find this out until years after the fact. But when I was about 10 or 11... I was vaguely aware that Grosspapa had died. I think he was nearly 90.
Yeah.
And much, much later I found out that he'd died because he'd had been having some troubles with urinary tract stuff, few infections. He'd gone to the doctors and they'd said, yes, you know, you're getting to a certain age. You probably will have some problems now with incontinence. But, you know, I don't know. I'm talking like a doctor would talk now. Yeah. Perhaps they were quite severe about it. But obviously now we know.
Yeah.
And this isn't, you know, this is 20 few years ago.
Yeah.
There's all sorts you can do. Anyway, that's all he heard. And he came home and hung himself.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
You're joking.
No.
Because he was like, that's it. I'm
old. Not living that. He's too much, so prideful. I'm not living like that. Can you believe it?
Whoa. That is intense.
But also, so that's huge. And then no one tells anyone.
Oh, God.
No one talks about it. No one. I found out from my mum, who was like, oh, God, I thought we told you that. I knew we weren't allowed to tell you at the time or something, but I thought.
So that's her dad.
And then that seeps down and down and down. So when my parents broke up when I was 11, Nana and Gordy found out because I let slip to them.
Oh, yeah.
They hadn't told them. No one tells anyone anything.
Yeah, because that's, you're right. Once it becomes big things aren't told, everything is just like, well, just don't tell them. Just don't tell them because we don't know how to start.
I remember my Nana's face when I was like, oh, yeah, and I'm going to live with Mum. And she was like, oh, what? See, I'm not living together.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so I think that. And I think also sort of, so obviously with the food and eating stuff with my Nana, she was, so this is all, I mean, that's kind of her background.
Yeah, yeah, which is important. And, I feel like we
also,
need to know that.
Yeah, we need to know that. But also she, what my dad is very funny, I have ended up working in comedy and it's all from her.
Really?
She was so funny.
Was her Linda a little
so
joker?
Naughty and so funny.
Wow.
The cheekiest woman. She was like this tiny little sparrow. Absolutely stunning.
Wow.
Like these big brown eyes and these incredible cheekbones. Thick black curly
That's
hair.
That's how she bagged old Gordy back when he was
working
his way around.
Padding away around. Although in that relationship, she wore the trousers. She was clever, ambitious, very, very driven, very focused, always saving.
Wow.
They never between them earned more. I mean, and Gordy just did what he was told. They never between them earned more than 13 grand a year, which obviously at the time was worth a lot more.
Yeah,
but even with that, they lived in this big, I think 4 or 5 bed house on a corner in Farnborough. It was a very up and coming area at the time in the 50s and 60s, 70s. And they bought a house in Sheffield where both their son and daughter went to uni for them to share. And when they sold that, they always then had a deposit for all the houses that they've ever been able to get since.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know, she was an incredible combination of so tight because of the war and because of refreshing. So she would, I mean, she would give you, you would have to be very, very wary about what, she'd offer you a mince pie in August and you'd be like, oh, never. And now you quickly learn you do not, it would be the chewiest, most, and a fridge, I mean, it wouldn't stink, she kept it spotlessly clean, but she would drink that yoghurty milk, but out of defiance.
Like,
but
don't
also
waste.
It'd never be her, it would always be foisted on others.
Right.
So she had this, she was a massive, massive feeder.
Oh, wow.
But conversely, hated, and I mean that word, hated fat people.
Wow.
So she would, I overheard her once saying to my grandfather, to Gordy, you are so fit. Heavy enough, a piece of cake. Like, in the same sentence, as if there's nothing wrong with that.
Oh my God.
But also, I mean, to go back to the funniness and the naughtiness, she was just naughty.
Yeah.
Constantly farting, squeaking out, this beautiful woman constantly rippling out, cracking out little trumps all the time, and then just smirking, chuckling, blaming it on an animal. She had a cat called Mitzi, who was evil, actually. But it was always Mitzi's bumhole that had done the deed. She was very kind of... She'd always say things wrong. She would always say, like, she'd instigate a game over dinner of showing a bit of food on your tongue.
Oh, my God.
And then, like, my dad would ramp it up so that it'd gone too far.
Yeah,
and it'd
yeah.
be, like, you know, just, like, whole mouthfuls slopping out. Down. And she would turn a blind eye, and then she'd want the game to finish, so she'd say, "Keith, Jessica, I can tell that you are... I am not looking, but I can tell that you are rooting me."
Instead, oh, you say rooting all the
time. I know,
time.
And that's from her.
Oh, my God.
I called my son Rudy. That's confusing. yeah, but I mean, she'd get things slightly wrong. She never, it was always a little bit Austrian English yeah, kind of mingle. Yeah. She'd say things like, "We should go for a frisk walk." And her P's and B's were always confused. So it was always like, "This is very unpleasant."
Oh. Yeah. Well, I'm not surprised. She's called Herlinda.
Herlinda.
Not
yeah.
Belinda.
Not Belinda.
That's very confusing for everybody. So she marries Gordy and then they come over here after the war.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then so you've got your aunt and then your dad. So was she very present when you were a child then?
Yeah.
So she lived near
you
then?
She adored. I think, I was an only child till I was 16 and I was spoiled. Like, she adored me.
Yeah, yeah.
No, they did, not far, about an hour and a half, 2 hours away.
Yeah, yeah.
I grew up in Dorset and they were in Farnborough in Hampshire. And I would go there for all my half terms.
Oh, wow.
So my mum's parents lived very near us and I would have, both parents worked full time. My dad worked in London, so he's only home at weekends. And so I'd be with my English grandparents a lot in the evenings, but yeah, I had all my half terms with Nana and Gordy, and they were amazing because you look back now and think that they must have lived for it because they gave me all their time. Aww. My parents were busy with work, but also they weren't kind of like, "What should we do now?" kind of parents. They're not more 80s about it.
Yeah,
they didn't really sort of interact. Just sort of survived. Very independent, very young. Whereas when I was at Nana and Gordy's, it was like, "What do you want to do now?" I joined in with all. She taught me loads of. We'd always have these amazing, clear Austrian soups, and she'd teach me how to make these pancakes that you cut into strips to go with it. And it's always my job to go outside and cut off a bunch of chives and chop them up and just put them in, or you made these amazing sort of polentary type little dumpling things to go inside. She taught me how to make schnitzel and stuffed peppers, but she also, they had this very 70s house and they've only just sold it actually. I mean, she died, I think, 13, 14 years ago,
yeah.
But Gordy's just gone into a nursing home about 4 years ago, and they've just... His memory's almost completely gone now. But they just sold the house. I have so many memories in that house, so I can't imagine what it's like for my dad and aunt. Actually, my dad doesn't give a shit. I asked my dad for this. I was like, can I check with you any memories that I might have forgotten and stuff about Nana? And also, when exactly did she die? And he was like, "I haven't got a clue." That's his mum.
But some people just have a very, like, they don't get into dates. Like, I've learned that some people are like, "I can tell you the time," like, "I can tell you the time and the date and the year," of course, when my dad died. But I know from other people, they're just like, "A couple of years ago." Like, and it's almost like, I think it's a choice. It's like, I don't want it to be a thing, so it's not a thing.
I think there's an element of choice with my dad and an element of skunk.
Yeah, so the choice wasn't his choice. The choice was just...
Also, I think there's an element of choice. Yeah, I don't think he cares about dates. It doesn't like poignancy at all.
Yeah, exactly. Some people get very like, "I don't want that to be like, oh, on the day I feel this." Yeah, so it's just a blur.
Yeah. I think it's to the point where actually when his sister reminds him it's been this many years since mum died, he just finds that annoying.
Yeah. Well, often with my brother, I'll be like, "Oh, it's, you know, dad's anniversary coming up." And he's like, "Is it?" And I'm like, to me, I'm like, "How do you not like that?" So, because to me, it's like, burn, like, sort of like singed on my brain, but like, he's like, "I just don't see it like that." So that's what's helped me to understand people do things differently.
They do, don't they? And actually, do you know one thing that's given me a bit more empathy on that front is whenever I'm asked to give my own son's birthday, which is only 2.5 years ago, I know it, but I panic.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I feel like anything that there's a bit of emotional pressure on to know is horrible.
I also feel like you're judged so badly if you don't say it straight away. But I think, so then when I'm asked her birthday, I think, "Oh, you better get this right. Better like make it look like you know." And then that's a gap.
Yes, that's a long pause.
In me thinking, right, make this look good so you look like a good mum. And then they're looking at me and I'm going, I actually completely know it. I just wanted it to look really like I did know it. And Yeah, it's so awkward. It's so awkward. So you spent an awful lot of time with him. So
I spent loads of time with him. We had lots of lovely holidays together. They had lots of timeshares.
Well, they had their fingers in some pies.
Yeah. They had lots of timeshares. So we had lots of very, very package holidays. Oh. So we'd go to like Tenerife.
Oh, wow. Just with Nana and Gordon.
My mum and dad would go as well. Yeah, yeah. But like, yeah, we'd stay in an apartment, self-catering always, lots of packets of soups, lots of... And occasionally, my mum and dad would have to fight to get them to go out for a meal because they're so tight, always saving. And on the occasion that Nana and Gordy went away for a holiday and my mum and dad house sat, my mum has a really clear memory of as they were driving out. So, I mean, it's not a huge drive, yeah, but as they were leaving, driving away, in full view of them, Nana was already going through the bins. And like picking out like tins that still had two beans in.
Oh my god.
She was like, my mum calls her the original recycler. But also she was just off her time. Yeah. She didn't bear any food waste at all. But similarly, so I would spend all holidays and stuff there and she would feed me. My mum found me once sat aged two with a bowl of jam and a spoon. I wonder why I've always been a pudgling. A bowl of jam. And Nana's response apparently was, it is homemade.
It is homemade.
It is homemade jam. What do you expect, Nikki? But there's this, it's this strange thing, isn't it? And there's this, there was so much strength and so much fragility in her all at once because of all this repression. My mum is a nurse for years and years and years. And at one point, I don't know what illness my Nana had, but she really came down bad with something. And my mum had to nurse her. And they'd always had a fractious relationship, I think. You know, very much mother-in-law, daughter-in-law relationship. And my mum had to give her bedpan and wash her, you know. Instantly. And I think that changed their friendship forever. I think when you become one of the probably one or two people in the world that ever get to see my Nana week, then you become quite special. And I think that changed everything. Also, I think with the food stuff, I have a memory of really hurting Nana. Not in the way it was ever on purpose, but and at the time I was like, yeah, I was fine with my parents breaking up when I was 11. But then I had a year of really lots and lots of issues around food, lots of making myself sick, lots of patches, never went more than a couple of weeks, but I'd go for a few weeks, maybe sometimes 3 or 4 weeks, with just having an apple a day and fainting quite a bit and stuff. And I remember going to stay with them during one of those, and I remember it breaking her heart. Aww. And she would never show any weakness to me, but I was having a banana a day then, because I remember I remember exactly how I'd eat the banana, really slowly and methodically. And I remember Dad phoning on the landline, obviously, and saying, and I had no idea I'd been upsetting her, but saying, I've had Nana on the phone to me every day crying, and I have never heard her cry, Jess, since I was a child over something. You know, you have to eat something. And being like, oh, and then the next, you know, I turn around and there's this amazing cheese on toast with little chopped chives on it next to me, and being like, all right. And that was the end of that fortnight of, you know. And but I think back at that now and think, oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you don't think when you're in one of those spirals what you're doing to the people around you. But also, that's the worst possible thing I could have done to her, is not accept her food, because that's how her and my dad show their love.
But then maybe that's why you did it, because that would have got maybe that's the attention you needed to be like, I'm a bit in pain and I don't know. So the way I'm showing it is by rejecting your love because I'm angry at everybody.
Yeah.
So it's not surprising that you went for that if it meant so much to her. But yeah, God, food in the war, it does fucked a lot of them up, didn't
it? Fucked a lot of them up badly.
Yeah, it definitely did, I know. Yeah.
And they all like it, you know, say, oh, so fit. It's a conversation they love.
Oh, really, about talking about fat people?
Well, including like...
And she was never fat. She was never fat.
No. And my dad from pictures was a pretty porky 5-year-old. Right, but he has always been pretty wraith-like in the time I've known him. But he'll call himself a disgusting fat pig when he's got even the faintest beer gut.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all completely screwed about weight. Amazing.
But it does, like you said, it comes from... Well, I don't know. I think it's not just the war, it's lack of control. And that must have been a period where there was literally no control over what you could eat and what you could do. And even funny enough, my grandpa talking about coming back from the prisoner of war camp, he said, oh, I was 6 stone when I came back. Now, I remember my grandpa being a big man. Right. Like, he used to say, try and put your arms around me. Try and make them meet. And you never... So you'd literally... My arms would just get, like, round his belly. He was like a pregnant woman. He was so round. He'd go, go on, Kelly. Try and make them meet round the back. And we'd have, like, a test. Because he was such... Like, he was like a ball. And in this talk, he says... He's like, I'm 6 stone. I mean, look at me now. I'm ashamed. Oh, but I'd rather be like that. I'd rather be like this now than I was then. So, yeah, he keeps talking about salt. We had no salt. You don't know what life's like, do you? Don't have salt. Mm. So, like, obviously for him, I remember him eating so much, but he had this 4-year period where...
Because he could, yeah.
He was literally almost starved to death and people were dropping dead around. So, not surprising. He enjoyed
surprising.
A Chinese takeaway. Yeah. So you stayed with him a lot. So how old were you when she died?
20 or 21.
Right, okay.
And I remember it because I dealt with it appallingly in the sense that I didn't deal with it at all.
Was she the first sort of big death you'd had to sort of come across?
My mum's dad died when I was 9. And I think actually that was a bit more healthy. Yeah. I mean, it was definitely a lot more healthy in how it was approached. I just remember he had been very ill. He was virtually blind. He had diabetes, and it was before they could manage diabetes like they could now. My mum's got it now. It's sort of hereditary in my family. But he, I remember walking into my nana's house, as I would always after school, and my whole family there, all my aunts and uncles, apart from the one that lives in America, who was on his way, and just walking in and being told by my nana that he had died.
Wow.
And I think everyone had been, up until that point, in shock, talking about it. And I remember walking into that room, being told that, and instantly going, and really melting down. And then they all suddenly had this license.
Because you're allowed. The child is crying, so it's not...
To be really... And I don't remember his funeral, but I was, I don't remember that much more about that afterwards, other than that my nana's a hero and has gone, went on to just be so, and is still so active and happy and amazing.
So she's still alive then?
Yeah.
Wow. And
she lives in a little bungalow right next to my mum's now. Oh. So my mum does her meals and stuff for her, but she, my mum cooks and stuff for her, and she has to have a cleaner and stuff now. And she's getting a little bit more. She's 89 in a few months, but she's a bit forgetful, but she's not like, there's nothing clinically wrong there. She's just aging and her body's slowing down. And she does have patches. She's had to have a pacemaker and stuff. There are times where you think, but no, man, she's amazing.
Sounds like that was obviously, like the emotion came out.
Yeah,
you were
the emotion came
sad.
Out, exactly. I was allowed
Everyone
to be sad.
Said,
Everyone
sad.
Wanted to talk about it. Yeah. My mum, if I want to and she wants to, we can talk to each other about him now, Len. There's, I have some fabulous memories. I remember getting my new CD and going to their house after school and asking him if I could put my new CD on, and it was Right Said Fred. And I'm putting it on, it's like, I'm too sexy for my shirt. And I don't remember this, but apparently I said to him, by the way, Grandad, I know what this music is. It's actually sex music.
Sex music.
Yeah. At 9. What? 8 or 9. What?
Poor Len. How do
poor
I deal with this?
Len just apparently thought it was hilarious. He looked like BFG. So that was the only other incident I had. So I've been very, very lucky. I don't feel like I've had hardly any tragedy in my life. And so when Nana died, so much shame around this.
How did you find out? What happened?
Dad phoned me.
Right, okay, yeah.
She had had kidney failure for a few months. So she'd been in and out of hospital having dialysis, and she'd been in a massive amount of pain, very out of sorts, very bloated, not being able to drink very much. And I think it had only been a few months, but in my head it wasn't something she was going to die from.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, I think it had been pretty obvious that it was pretty awful.
Yeah, yeah.
It's sitting in group rooms having this dialysis done that was very painful.
Yeah.
The whole of life had become suddenly very painful. She's not one to be debilitated and in bed. Also gaudy, useless. He tried to fry a pork pie once. Like, she did everything in that house. Like, so it was like,
oh God.
Yeah. You know, and actually, of all the personalities of someone you don't want to be in agony for too long, hers was up there, number one. So I think there was an element of relief, but there's also, I don't know. So there was this element of relief. There was an element of relief in how it was put to me.
Yeah.
You know, there were no tears. I've still never, ever seen my dad be sad about it.
Wow.
He told me that he went to the funeral of his my sort of ex-stepmom's great aunt, like so very many, yeah. many steps removed. And out of nowhere, he said he cried his tits off at this yeah. funeral for someone else. And he said he knew that was his finally having a cry about his mum
yeah.
dying. And that was a decade on.
Yeah.
That wasn't that long
ago. You pack
ago.
It deep. It takes yeah. a long time to unpack.
Yeah. So he was just like, yep, you know, mum's died. It's fine. It's relief. You know, I'll be honest, I'm relieved. You know, that's how it's put to me.
Yeah.
Okay, right, fine. And the funeral was on this date and it was in a few weeks' time or whatever. And then I realised I had a holiday planned with five girlfriends and I was driving them all from Dorset to France to a place we'd all spent all our savings on to hire.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I don't know if that's even true, actually. But I just remember there was a lot riding on it
yeah.
and I was taking everyone. And now I look back at it and think, of course all those friends were saying, oh, it's fine, Jess, we get it, you can't come. You know, and I remember thinking, well, I don't think, you know, it's actually that big a deal. Like, I think she would have hated me to waste the money
of
this holiday. And I remember saying to Dad, what shall I do? You know, shall I go, shall I miss the funeral? Because I don't, you know, I just, oh God. I mean, because I find this so hard to even admit because I can't believe I didn't go, but I didn't go. I convinced myself what she'd want is for me not to upset all those people and all those plans and waste all that money. And the second I was in that car going on my way to that holiday, and I could tell from how my friends were like, I can't believe we're still doing this.
Yeah. But then it's
that
really...
I should have gone. And I don't think that my aunt has ever forgiven me for it. And I haven't quite forgiven myself yet.
But I think it's really hard to be... to judge yourself, 14 years on. And I do... Like, I said stuff to my husband, like, well, why did I do that? And he'll go... You were 15? And it's like, yeah, you were like 20. Like, what the fuck do 20 year olds
The thing is,
know?
As well, though, I wasn't sad yet.
Yeah, exactly.
I wasn't
and
sad yet.
Dad
it's not
sad,
an excuse, but my dad isn't sad, yeah. My aunt was sad, but my aunt and I have a turbulent relationship.
Yeah.
So that was, and of course, you know, and I wanted to be sad. I really wanted to be sad.
You can't just make it appear.
No, and we were only away for about, I think, 5 or 6 days. And on the day of her funeral, I drove off to this, for like half an hour away to this church and sat in this church on my own. And it wasn't, I'm more spiritual now than I ever was then.
Yeah.
But I sat on my own in there for like a couple of hours, just willing tears to come.
Yeah.
I lit a candle for her and sat there feeling nothing. Desperate to have an appropriate emotion, and I didn't. And I feel like, do you know what? I feel like I've had them all since I had a kid.
Yeah, I do. But also, like, people don't give credit to shock.
Yeah,
and that the first bit of grief, and I won't say stages because I don't think they're stages, is numbness.
Yeah,
it's shock and numbness. I didn't cry at my dad's funeral. I like my friends were there, and I was talking to them and talking to my brother's friends, and like I don't know what the fuck was going on.
Yeah,
and I
really.
Think. Yeah, and again, this idea of appropriate, like, people just have such an idea of, like, right, I should be crying and wailing.
Yeah.
But it's like, when you talk about your granddad, it's like, well, you know, he was old and it was, you know, there was all these other things happening and everyone cried. So the adults showed you, oh, well, this is just something sad. But clearly this woman was not a woman who expressed emotion anyway. So then when she dies, of course there's not an outpouring of emotion because... that's not the relationship anyone had with her.
No.
Do you know what I mean? So it's like, I think it is, people's reaction is often reflected like, well, how they were in life sometimes. And that's not a criticism. It's just, of course, you maybe didn't know how you felt about your nana because it hadn't been discussed in emotional terms. It'd been discussed in food and hanging out on holidays.
Yeah.
So then to be like, well, now you should cry. Like, of course you're not just going to... Emotion doesn't just appear.
It doesn't just work like that,
no,
does it?
No, it doesn't. And I think the shock...
But I still think that was... like this ridiculous, defiant, selfish act. And I don't know what caused it. I've never found the root of it, but I've always had a massive aversion to going to funerals.
Yeah.
Similar to Hindus. In the sense that, like, as soon as it's announced, I know I'm meant to want that different reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
Catharsis and a party. Or maybe not, both.
Yeah.
But I can't, the very thought of it makes me think I can't. bear it.
Yeah.
And when I was at school, there's lots of road calming measures in Swanage where I grew up now. But there was a huge problem when I was a teenager of
boy racers
learning to drive and dying in their cars. Loads of boys, like 3 or 4 a year, 17-year-old boys. And one of my sort of school friends, we weren't close, but I'd snogged him a few times, died in a car accident. And the whole school went to his funeral and I didn't.
Mm. But I don't think that's good or bad. I just think it's about what you can and can't handle, or what you're willing to do. You know what I mean? I think we put these judgments on it of like, that was selfish, that was this. But I just think, like you said, why did you stop eating a banana a day? It's like, we do things sometimes that are because we're unable to process other things.
Yeah.
And if death is something that scares you or you feel anxious about, like, then yeah, going to a funeral is... I've talked about this before. I didn't go to one of our very good friend's mum's funeral because we were away. I was away with my husband. We were living abroad. My husband went back for it. And I did all the, no, it's fine because I'm here and it'd be too expensive. I can't get a train. Ben can get a train. It's easy for him.
Yeah.
And on the day, I was only in France, and I remember thinking I should have gone. Mm. But it was upsetting me in a way that I couldn't vocalise.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes it's just, you're just unable to say...
It's that, isn't
Say
it?
It.
Also, I don't know. I think I have only until recently, and I mean really recently, like in my 30s, been able to comfortably cry in public.
Yeah.
And I still can't really cry in front of my parents.
Wow, yeah.
I don't know what that is. I had a weird thing where I didn't cry for 8 months after I had my son. And everyone told me I'd have these crying days.
Yeah.
Nope. I can't show weakness.
Yeah.
I remember when I was in my 20s going, like, travelling around Central America, and I watched this, went to an open-air cinema in this back of this awesome bar in Costa Rica, and it was very dodgy, just a big sheet showing a dodgy copy of Million Dollar Baby. I don't know if you've seen that. It's very sad. And I sat there with all my new travelling friends to my right, and it's a sad film. I cried entirely out of my left eye. I actually did. I didn't ask physically possible. I'm physiologically ashamed of crying in public.
But then everything you said about your dad and your grandma, like you were like, and it's again, it's not criticism. It's just
I would hate to cry in front of my dad. I think that's part of it.
If you're brought up
still
with
now,
that,
I would hate that.
That scene as a weakness, or that scene as not what's done. Where do you learn that you can do it? Again,
cinemas.
But yeah, I think it's not about like when 20-year-old Jess doesn't go to that funeral. I think the thing with past you and death is like you just have to forgive them because like they were dealing with something and that's how they chose to deal with it. But that's not a judgment on how much you loved her or care for. It was just like your brain went, I can't really take this in.
Yeah.
If I go on holiday, I won't have to take this in.
Yeah.
And then obviously you get there and think, it hasn't gone away. She's still dead. Maybe. But then maybe you would have gone and been like, I wish I'd gone on holiday. This is awful. And it's not how I wanted to remember her. That's the problem as well.
It's about upsetting other people
as well. Yeah, it is.
It's when you know you've done something unforgivable in the eyes of someone who, you know, whatever. But, you know, there's nothing you can do about it now.
No, and I also think that...
And I do, yeah.
That sense of unforgivableness, I think, is hard because I think I upset some people. I know, I've never discussed it, but I know I had upset people by not going to this particular person's mum's funeral. No one said anything, but I felt it. And then I sort of, it was so horrible because you can't defend yourself because no one's saying you should have gone. But I really felt like I can't put into words why I couldn't, but I couldn't.
Yeah.
And that's shit and that's a failing on my part. But also people sometimes are weak and not as good as you want them to be.
Yeah.
Like to say it's unforgivable is like, oh, but it can't be. It can't be unforgivable. Like, because you're dealing with something so massive, you know. That's like saying if someone just given birth and being like, well, now you should do this. Like we both know. You don't make the choice of how you deal with afterbirth. It just sort of happens to you. You're just like, you can think, oh, I wish I hadn't done that. But you're like, well, I had no choice.
Now.
Like, that nobody could have swayed me either way.
Yeah.
So you go on holiday and you come back.
Yeah.
And is she talked about? Like, does Gordy talk about her? Or is she kind of...
No.
Is everyone just like, we're not talking about it?
Yeah, that's it.
Wow. And is she buried? Like, is there a grave you can go to or anything like that?
Nope.
What? So was she cremated, do you think?
I think so. No one even told me.
Oh, my God.
No one talks about it. My aunt will sometimes talk about her mum.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, it's not spoken about, but I think about her all the time. And weirdly, I can talk about her. I mean, it's not, there's no, I didn't feel any, I didn't second guess myself when I texted Dad to ask if it was any particular funny stories or sad stories or anything that he remembered, because I was going to talk about her. And also, can you remember when she died? And, you know, I didn't worry about him as I sent that message. And he was really jolly and got back straight away. You know, it's not like there's a barrier about talking about it. It's just no one's got any incentive to. But I feel like I talk about, I think about her all the time.
Wow.
And I think that since having Rudy, and also my partner as well, because I think she would have adored Mikey because he is a hoarder. And she was a hoarder.
She would have approved of that.
I mean, I tried to put an empty wicker hamper that there is no room for in our one glorified one-bed flat that's got a hoarder's amount of stuff in the pavement with a note on it yesterday. And he nearly wept and went outside and brought it back in.
Oh,
now
God.
It's balanced precariously underneath a fireplace in with a load of cardboard boxes full of shit. They would have adored each other for their bin rummaging and keeping of everything. And also, they had so much time for me. They were also so creative with me. Like, I was always building things, carpentry, cooking, making stories, performing plays in the serving hatch between their dining room and kitchen.
Oh, my God.
She taught me every capital city in the whole of Europe.
Wow.
Like all this stuff, all this time for me. And I can just picture them having it for Rudy.
Yeah.
And just like, oh, I wish.
Yeah.
I wish that. But luckily, like, do you know what? Luckily, Mikey's parents are of a similar, like, the Mikey's mum is really craftsy and they're really hands-on.
But it sounds like really provided a part of your childhood that was really important to you and special.
And was only provided there.
Yeah, that you really got something there where it was like...
huge.
Like, sounds like very sort of old-fashioned childhood. Like, you just make do and you have fun, like she did back in Austria. Which, I can... I was thinking about, it's funny, like, because I just heard this recording of my grandpa, and I was like thinking about, you know, he was a big, big character, but he was so important to, like, it's funny when, because I think there was difficulties with him and my dad sometimes and my uncles as well, but to me as a child, you skip all of that and all you see is this, like, this guy that, like, has lived this adventure and he tells you stories and he used to make me, he used to improvise with me, which I only realised when I started learning what improv. So he'd say, like, Gary, give me five objects and I'd have to tell him five objects. Then he'd make a story involving them all, which is like an improv
That's amazing.
Exercise. Yeah, and he'd be like, right, I'm going to get these all in a story once upon a time. And yeah, stuff like that, like when you're a kid, just becomes like, they're magic, don't they? They just seem like magical people because they haven't raised you. So you have none of that like, but you did this. You're just like, they're amazing. And she sounds like she was a really good nana.
She was a really good nana. Yeah. And they always had like, even in the height of summer, like the fattest bedding. Such an enormous amount of bedding and electric blankets. And also even the racism, if you'd called her on it, she'd have denied it.
Yeah.
It was just a culture, it wasn't something she'd ever thought through.
Yeah.
I remember as a teenager, either me or Dad calling her out for using the word P-A-K-I.
Right, yeah.
And she said, Set is just a shortening of sin name, a nickname. She had no idea it was rude. But I remember when I was... they just got a CD player and I asked to play my new CD. It's obviously something I did with all my grandparents. and she said, yes, you can put it on. And I put it on and you can put it on. And it was Tracy Chapman.
Oh, amazing. Good call. Good call, lady. Don't you know you gotta
run. Oh, such a good album. Anyway, she listened for a minute and then she went, let me see the cover. I don't know if you remember the cover.
Yeah, I do remember. It was just Tracy's. Yeah, really close up.
Like orange background.
Yeah.
Short hair.
Yeah.
And she just said, oh, it is a bonzo. Yeah. Didn't throw it, but dropped the CD case on the floor.
Whoa. What did you do? Just
even at nine, I went, I don't think you can say that, Nana. I love this CD.
Oh, my God. I've never heard that.
I've never even heard the word since or anywhere else, but it can't be a kind one. Fucking hell.
Austria's own. God. Wow. Yeah.
And I had a black boyfriend. I had a couple, but I had a black boyfriend when I was about, this, I don't know, 19.
Mm.
British Nigerian guy called Anthony. We weren't seeing each other for very long, but he met her.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
And you know what? I was dreading it. And yeah. I had warned him. And to be, it's not to be fair, actually, that's the wrong way of putting it, but his mum had been fascinating with me.
Right, okay, yeah.
She had said to my face, "You are horribly white." And also had insisted that I didn't like her spicy cooking when I absolutely loved it. Anyway, he met Nana. Oh, my word. I was so panicked. And then I cannot tell you, she was so funny, yeah. So charming, all over him, fascinated by him. Lovely. They got on like a house on fire.
Wow.
I found out a week later that as we'd arrived, she'd been waiting at the window. And apparently as we'd got out of the car, she'd said, "Oh, it's black, yes, he is all spades."
Oh, my God.
But that is, she hadn't said anything.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I'm not saying it makes her any less racist. She was a massive racist. But actually, I wonder, oh, have you just never, ever met? Like a lot of people with horrible prejudices, you've never, ever encountered anyone in real life.
Yeah. So it's just... like you said, the music or those people are in a group over there, but to actually see a person and be like, oh, he's nice and he's talking to me.
Yeah, and I don't think that would have ever been an issue, but, you know, she was voted Conservative, which was as far right as you could vote really then.
Yeah.
Like, you know, she... God. It fascinating.
It's like talking about the war, like it's really tricky territory because I think a lot of, like, our generation, I've grown up with grandparents that were racist.
Yeah.
Apart from my grandpa, who was very, like, he had this big thing of, like, no, like, compassion to everyone. Mm-hmm. Everyone's just doing... But you do have to remember historical, you know, it doesn't
context.
Excuse it, but historical
context. You have to give it
context,
the context
yeah,
and not be anachronistic about it. But, you know, you still have to go, oh, not, you know,
yeah,
it wasn't okay.
Yeah.
And I think even as a little kid, you know, you heard that and went, oh, no. We're not doing that anymore.
Yeah.
No, not doing that anymore. But she'd have just chuckled, you know.
Yeah.
She wouldn't, I don't know. She never denied the horror of the system she was brought up in and under.
Yeah.
She would never have denied the horror of it, but she'd also never want to talk about it or say sorry to anyone. But it's not her thing. I mean, she was a kid.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But she was what an incredible combination of things. But also she was like she was just nuts. She'd do things like their house burnt down.
What?
The house they had before the one I ever saw, and then the house they were in had a huge fire in it, but that was correctable afterwards. But both times she had awful lungs because both times she was in and out.
Rescuing stuff.
Yeah, objects.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Totally batshit.
Wow. So it's been, like you said, been like, what, so 14 years or something?
Yeah, it's going to be 13 or 14 years.
Yeah, and I do think, like you said, having a baby then sort of, I guess because you're reminded of childhood again and what childhood you're going to create. Mm. But then isn't that kind of lovely that because they did that for you, you will now do that for Rudy and teach him how to make little dumplings and stuff. I assume that's your plan.
Yeah.
Like
I hope so, yeah.
That's the amazing thing. I think sometimes you just have to take... the good stuff and process the bad stuff and then just go, but there is also this other stuff that you can pass on even though she's not here.
Totally, yeah.
But how do you feel about death now? Like, are you someone who worries about it particularly? Or like you said, you haven't had like a lot of deaths.
I haven't had a lot of deaths. And I think intellectually I know that I have to start going to funerals. But I had a very dear teacher, my most brilliant teacher in all my education, I stayed friends with afterwards, who'd had a huge stroke and so was quite changed for the last sort of 15 years, died very recently, maybe last year. And I couldn't go to her funeral. I had a big work commitment and I couldn't go. And I felt this time I really analysed it.
Yeah.
I knew it was I ought to go.
Mm.
But I had this, it was just an awful dilemma. Yeah.
But it sounds like sometimes, like, I think maybe you've got a thing about, like, oh, it's me avoiding it again, rather than, like, each situation is different.
Yeah, each situation is different, actually. Yeah, I don't know how I feel about death. I feel like I am. I feel my feelings.
Yeah.
I have very, very extreme feelings. Mm. Just as I think as a grown up, I now have very, very extreme highs and lows.
Yeah.
Which I temper mainly with lifestyle and exercise. And I think that's part of what terrifies me about death is that when I lose someone very, very close to me, I'm fucking terrified of how I'll, of the lows.
Yeah, I think it's hard, but you, again, the thing is, like, you don't know how you're going to process it.
Yeah.
And the thing I've learned is every death is different.
Yeah, right, yeah.
So I think a bit like with kids, I've only had one, but I know from speaking to people, they'll be like, well, every birth is different. And every child, like, you know, when they're like, oh, they're so different to their brother and sisters, like, of course they are, like, they're individual people. And the same with every death. Like, I think I felt like that, like, the next death after my dad, I was like, and of course there's stuff that's hard, but you deal with each one differently based on so many things, your relationship with them, how you dealt with it when they were dying. Like, so many factors can not protect you from those lows, because those lows are just there for a reason. They're there because you love that person.
Yeah. I don't know, conversations like this and the amount that I think about Nana and the amount that I think about that teacher as well. Mm. Yeah, I think next time someone important to me dies, I don't care what the situation is.
Yeah.
I'm going to go and see what it's like to say goodbye in the space that's been assigned to say goodbye to them with all the other people like you're meant to, and just see what that's like.
Yeah, I think just see what it's like.
Yeah.
You might go there and not shed a tear. That's the thing. And again,
I'm just make a mockery of myself. I think, do you know what? I think there's another element of this.
Yeah.
Is that you're never not expected to be the funny one when you're a comedian.
Yeah.
And
that pressure.
I don't know, the older I get, the less of a funny one I am socially anyway.
Yeah, same.
But it's just like, you know, I'm not trying to impress everybody or get laid or whatever it was that was making me constantly clown at school or whatever. You know, it's not.
Yeah.
And now it's like, oh, no, I would want to be the wreck. I'd want to be free to be the wreck in that
But
space.
Like you were when you were nine, maybe you could be the wreck for everybody else and that would be really helpful.
Yeah.
I think it's like, again, like seeing that.
So I won't be your rock, I'll be your wreck.
The strength in wrecks.
Yeah.
Shipwrecks can be full of treasure.
People will dive and inspect me.
Dive into your bits.
We've taken it too far. Find some treasure.
Find some treasure in your dusty bits.
Oh, God. And it has been a while.
Well, Jez, thank you so much for coming to talk to me.
Hey, thanks for having me.
About Helinda.
Thanks.
You can follow Jess on Twitter at Jessica Foster Q. Remember, Foster Q Gardens. And you can listen to her brilliant podcast, Hoovering, on Acast. It's very funny, touching and tasty. What more could you want? You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast. And you can email us, thegriefcast@gmail.com. Music was provided by the Glue Ensemble. And the show was edited by Kate Holland, with thanks to Whistledown Studios. And remember, you are not alone.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.